Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard Seascapes, your maritime programme. This week we'll have the tale of two cats from Norman Freeman and Tim McGuinness, photographer, blogger and filmmaker Brian Carlin on a hectic year on the water as he heads for Brazil and Rio de Janeiro in the Clipper Ventures Round the World race, Gerry Flynn on the latest edition of Inshore Ireland, but first to Dún Laoghaire, where earlier this week Seascapes caught up with some of the sailors taking part in the Laser European and World Championships. With sails flapping as the many world-class sailors began to take to the water at the National Yacht Club, we talked to James Espy.
My first day was pretty poor. A better day yesterday, so I'm hoping for two more races today and get myself on the goal feet and then progress the whole way up. So yeah, it's going okay.
And a fair bit of training, because people forget, you don't just turn up for the tournament. There's a lot goes on in between, isn't that it?
Yeah, there's months. Months of just working with your training partners, with your coaches, and then trying to get into the best shape you can be for the regattas. But you're training for every sort of light airs or breezy. You got to train for everything. So it's a lot of training goes behind the scenes. When you get the downtime, you just got to take it. You know, just have a couple of jokes with your friends and just, you know, talk over things. But you try and keep your mind as clear as possible. You don't want to be filling your head full of nonsense. I'm quite lucky because I'm going to go off to Sydney to train. And Sydney's usually quite a windy venue, but that's where my coach is from, so we're going to head out that way and just get train with him for a bit. But our worlds are in Oman, and it's quite light, a bit similar to Rio. So we're going to try and see how much weight I can lose and see what works. So therefore, if it comes around to Rio, you know, we know what I can do. We know how much weight I can lose in a certain length of time. So yeah, I haven't been to Rio as yet, but I'll probably keep it until next year until I go. But just keep hearing the reports from other sailors that do go, hear what they think, and then make our own assessment when we get there. But yeah, just keep testing the body and see what differences I can make. If you're winning in lasers, you're winning, and you can win in any class. You know, there's some legends around, and they go in the other classes and they just dominate those classes, and then they come back and they're just about winning the lasers. It's if you can win in the lasers, you literally will win anything, even the America's Cup. And there's some of the guys there have all come from lasers. So it's Damien Vauxhall, yeah, I've met him a few times. He's a really good offshore sailor, and there's a lot of courage to go off and do all that. It's not my type of sailing, but my sort of heroes would be the America Cup guys. I'm quite proud to know Tom Slingsby. He's racing in the America's Cup, and he's one of my good friends, and I'm very proud to know him. But I'm also at the same time Robert Scheidt, who hasn't really got into the America's Cup. He's stuck more to the Olympic side of things, but he's dominated the Olympic sailing for the last four Olympic cycles. And you got to take your hat off to someone like that who can perform in time and time again, pull off medals. You know, that's a lot of respect. So my respect for sailors would be, you don't necessarily have to be in one specific boat. I respect for what you can do. Like Damien Vauxhall, a lot of respect for what he does. Robert Scheidt, again, Olympics, and Tom Slingsby now in America's Cup. You sort of watch them all, and it's very spectacular sport, the range that we have.
So what got you out in the water first? What was it? Was it a mirror or something like that?
I was topper, just capsizing, having fun, learning to sail, and then just club racing after that, and then got into laser and never looked back. You'd be surprised what the yacht clubs do. You know, they're not just buildings there to go have a few beers in. They're actually encouraging kids to go out and... you know, if it weren't been for the clubs, Ireland would be nowhere with the sailing. And then obviously the ISA themselves, they do a lot of work with the kids who come through and then push them all the way up into my level. So it's a lot of work behind the scenes that you don't really see. Philip Doran's very good. He's had a good week. He's run away, actually. And then there's a few. And Finn Lynch should be another one coming up. He's going to be very good. But they're only as good as the people around them. So there's a few other kids who are pushing them or who pushes Finn. So... yeah, it's going to be a few good sailors coming through, hopefully after Rio, though.
James Espy. Well, from James to one of his heroes and one of the world's great sailors, Robert Scheidt from Brazil, who began his sailing on the inland waterways of Sao Paulo in an Optimist.
The laser is one of the most demanding boats in terms of physical fitness. when the wind is above 12 knots, it's really hard work to make it go fast. And we're here in Down Langrye for the Europeans. So far we had great racing. This is day 3, and we're waiting for the wind to settle down to go out and do some more racing. I was in the Optimist class back when I was 9 years old. Before the Opti, I already sailed with my dad on a bigger boat, just to get the feeling of sailing. And when I was 9, I started sailing alone on my Opti, and that's how it started, and back in a lake in São Paulo. I think a lot of people are already going there to train and try to experience the race course in Rio, which is quite a tricky place, quite challenging. And I think Brazil is working very hard to make all the preparations for hosting great games. It's my second time in Ireland. I was in Cork in 2001 for a Laser World Championship. So far in this regatta, I've been happy. I had 2 good days, 4 races in the top 4. I'm in 4th overall right now. Still a lot to come, still 4 days of racing, and hopefully I can keep up with my results. I think the Olympics is a great opportunity for Brazil. And we need to show to our people, to our country, and to the world that we can host a great event. As for sailors, it's a big opportunity because we always had to come to Europe to sail at the highest level. And now we have the chance to sail at home, and the best sailors will come to us to train with us. And so that's it's a big chance for us to develop as a team and to be really well prepared and get medals, hopefully, in 2016. The best place for a kid to start is a lake or protected waters, because it doesn't get scared, you know, the water is more quiet. And after you get some experience, then you can move on to sail on big winds and big waves. But I think it's great because you also get a feeling for the wind changes, which is very often happens in lakes. So I always recommend the kids to start on a lake. In my country, Torben Grile, who also has 5 Olympic medals, he's always been my role model. I also admire Russell Coutts a lot, 4-time America's Cup champion, and also my great rival Ben Ainslie. He's has the biggest record in Olympic sailing with 4 golds. It's a quite demanding boat physically, and the fleets are very good, very competitive. So it pushes your tactical skills a lot, strategic skills a lot, starting skills a lot. So it's a great way of building yourself as a good sailor.
Brazil's Robert Scheidt making a return to the laser class. We wish all the Irish sailors well on the water, as Annalise Murphy and Finn Lynch are doing particularly well in the Europeans and Worlds respectively. Now to the first of our feline tales, and this brought to us by the author of Sea Spray and Whiskey, Norman Freeman.
There's a long history of cats being carried on ships. The ancient Egyptians took cats on board their Nile sailing boats in order to catch birds in the bushes along the river banks. Cats were carried on trading ships in the ancient world, usually to keep rodents in check. This led to the spread of domesticated cats to those parts of the world accessible by ship. Phoenician vessels are thought to have brought the first cats to Western Europe in about 900 BC. Many myths about cats were held by the usually superstitious seafaring community. They were supposed to have some supernatural powers that could protect ships from dangerous weather. It was believed to be a lucky omen if a cat approached a sailor on deck. As well as that, they were considered to be intelligent and lucky animals. Some of the beliefs about them are realistic. Cats are able to sense slight changes in the weather because of their acutely tuned inner ears. Low atmospheric pressure, a usual indication of stormy weather, often makes cats nervous and restless. In modern times, the main role of shipboard cats was for pest control. They hunted the mice and rats that found their way on board ships and that could gnaw at ropes, woodwork, food, and especially cargoes of grain. These rodents could also be carriers of disease. So the marine cat was expected to be a keen hunter. Apart from that, cats also provided a form of companionship for sailors. One of the most publicised cats in modern times was called Blackie. He was the shipboard mascot of the British battleship the Prince of Wales. At the start of World War II, this vessel was one of the most modern and formidable warships afloat. In August 1941, she carried Winston Churchill to Newfoundland to meet the US President Franklin D. Roosevelt. When Churchill was disembarking, with the sailors drawn up in a guard of honour, Blackie came forward along the deck towards him. Churchill stooped down for a farewell rub. A photo was taken of this gentle act. The British propaganda machine sent it all round the world. It contrasted with photos of the harsh, manic face of the rival warlord, Adolf Hitler, with his fearsome-looking Alsatian. In honour of the event, the cat was renamed Churchill. I don't know if it was on board a short time later when the battleship was attacked and sunk by Japanese warplanes off the east coast of Malaya. Another famous wartime cat went to sea on board the Bismarck, Germany's most famous battleship in World War II. When the huge warship was sunk by the British in 1941, the cat was among the 116 survivors out of a crew of 2,200. He was found floating on a board and picked up by the British destroyer Cossack. The crew named him Oscar. A few months later, the Cossack herself was sunk by a torpedo, losing 159 of her crew. Again, the cat survived. Now called Unsinkable Sam, he became the ship's cat of the aircraft carrier Ark Royal. This warship was in turn torpedoed and sunk. Sam clung to a plank and was picked up by a motor launch. Someone with dry English humour described him as angry but unharmed. After that, it was decided he'd had enough wartime adventures. He was given a home in the office of the governor in Gibraltar. He was later sent back to the UK and actually ended up living in a seaman's home in Belfast. He died there in 1955. A pastel portrait of Sam, entitled Oscar, the Bismarck's Cat, by artist Georgina Shaw Baker, hangs in the National Maritime Museum in Greenwich, outside London.
Norman Freeman and the Many Lies of a Cat on the High Seas. To our Galway studios next, in the latest edition of Inshore Ireland, we hear from features editor Gerry Flynn.
September's Inshore Ireland has four pages of analysis and commentary on BIM's new five-year strategy, Capturing Ireland's Share of the Global Seafood Opportunity, which signposts building scale and enhancing competitiveness as the way to deliver 1,200 new jobs and €1 billion in sales in the seafood sector. Our lead story calls the plan ambitious, and it quotes BIM chairman Kevin Callanan, declaring it to be grounded in what he believes to be Ireland's ideal position to take advantage of the projected increase in seafood demand of an additional 42 million tonnes per annum by 2030. As to where at least part of this extra production will come from, Mr. Callanan points to informed market analysis, predicting a 50% increase by 2020 in the current annual production of 2 million tonnes of farmed salmon. This optimism is evident also across pages 18 and 19 in an interview with BIM Chief Executive Jason Hooley, who brushes aside a suggestion that the plan is unrealistic. Alongside this interview, we have a useful, at-a-glance, graphical summary of the seafood industry's sectors. This latest plan is likely to be welcomed by the finfish farming sector especially, as will our headline on page 3, which appeals for calm in the forthcoming debate and commentaries surrounding the application to farm salmon in Galway Bay near Inishear. We note that some opponents of this project are increasingly directing their attacks at individual Marine Institute scientists whose findings they disagree with. We carry a Marine Institute statement standing over the findings published by its scientists earlier this year, which found that the key driver in the survival of individual salmon stocks is more likely to be due to a general deterioration of the freshwater habitat. We also highlight 8 key points from the Marine Institute's latest scientific paper, which underlines its earlier findings. Balancing this, we include selected commentaries from the Inland Fisheries Ireland and environmental groups Save Bantry Bay and Antashka, all of which support the Canadian view. From scientific disagreement to the everyday dangers of working in the aquatic environment, the headline on page 10, Multi-Agency Initiative Launched to Tackle High Loss of Life at Sea, reports the recent launch by Ministers Varadkar and Coveney of Ireland's first National Maritime Safety Strategy Working Group. And finally, starting on page 20, for marine technology enthusiasts, we have a mouth-watering compilation by Cormac McGarry of the Halpin Centre for Research and Innovation in Ringaskiddy, highlighting some of the exciting projects underway there. Part of a 4-page marine R&D section, this is a must-read for secondary school pupils and indeed anyone attracted by the idea of pursuing a dynamic and challenging maritime career. This and much more in your September issue of Inshore Ireland.
You may well remember over a month ago we heard from Conor O'Byrne from Baldoyle, who is sailing in the Clipper Ventures Round the World race. Well, there are a number of sailors from this island participating, and we'll be hearing from them in the coming weeks. However, this week we talked to photographer, blogger and film cameraman Brian Carlin from Phoenix, whom we've met before on Seascapes. Brian has had a busy year so far and is in Brest in Brittany as the Clipper fleet head for Brazil. He came in to talk to Seascapes a few days ago about his thoughts on the voyage ahead.
I was just offered a position there to do as many legs as I like, but due to with other clients, I obviously have the World Match Racing Tour to look after and various other people, but 4 legs haven't clashed. So, I'm about to head off on Sunday, the 1st of September, and we're sailing to Brest and then on to Rio. I'll then come home and I'll rejoin the race in South Africa and we'll go to Western Australia. And then I'm hoping to spend some time over Christmas in Australia, and then we'll be doing Australia to China and then San Francisco to New York after that. So it's going to be an interesting time. I'm not sure what it's going to be like to be on board a boat for 35 days, but my job's there to film it and to tell the story. So let's see how it goes. It's going to be interesting. I'll have logged about 20,000 nautical miles, I think, or 25,000 nautical miles by the end of it. I'm not really sure what to think of it right now. It's I suppose we'll have a chat maybe after leg one and see what it's like, but I am looking forward to it, despite the conditions and all the rest. I just came back from a week's training just to get myself kind of associated with the boat and the crews and how it all works, and I met up with Sean MacArthur, the helm of Derry Londonderry, but you, like you said, that's they're the Irish guys, but there's a far afield from South Africa. In fact, there was a girl, Nam Sibo, who was sailing with us on CV25. And she had never seen the sea before. So you can imagine these kids there's 12 of them from South Africa. Some of them have never seen the ocean before and they're about to set off on what I would describe as an extreme introduction to sailing. So yeah, it's quite varied.
Taking photographs at sea, whether you're in a rib, in bouncy water or lumpy waters, as we'd call them, or out in a yacht, they're very, very different. It's a very different format, isn't it?
I can't even describe the level of difficulty. I wasn't really sure what I was signing up for in a way, because I've never done onboard reporting or taking photographs or trying to film. But I started off and it was flat cam and I was fine. And I had my pelly case tucked underneath someone's bunk and there was no big issue. And it was pretty straightforward. But then, of course, the weather changed and I was just like, all right, I think it was maybe at 10 o'clock at night. I was trying to find the CF card. The boat's at like 30 degrees heel. I have my laptop propped up against the nav station and I went looking for it was a CF card and my Zoom recorder. Anyway, in the process of it all, a lot of the contents fell out of the box and all over the floor, and it was wet, and there was a person above where the case was stored. They were trying to sleep. I was not trying to make noise. Just incredible. Anyway, there was a loud bang from the back. I thought my laptop had took flight and ended up smashing into a pipe cot, but all was good. I came back, And I decided, okay, this is just not a way of working on these boats. So really, 90% of my job is managing myself and my kit, not really filming or taking photographs. It's just so difficult. So basically, I ended up climbing into a pipe cot, strapping myself in more or less with the minimum amount of kit, and I started editing that night. Very difficult. The humidity down below, it's so hot. Like literally the beads of sweat were dripping off my chin and my nose onto my laptop, and I was wiping it dry with my t-shirt. It's incredibly hot. And we weren't even in, you know, the doldrums where the heat is, where the heat gets pretty intense. So I've no idea what to expect when we get down there, but I don't know. Plenty of towels, I guess. Keep the old laptop dry. Hopefully we'll arrive between the 1st and the 5th of October, and then I will have probably 4 weeks I wouldn't say off, because I'm going to be catching up on other work. I still may be joining the World Match Racing Tour in Bermuda. So I might actually be going straight from Rio to Bermuda. I'm not sure yet. The dates have just changed. So we're looking at that at the minute. But I'll be looking forward to probably some decent food and a bed after that, I guess.
Brian Carlin sailing in the Clipper Ventures around the world race, and we'll be hearing more about his progress. Next here on Seascapes, to veteran journalist and president of the Dublin Bay Old Gaffers Association, Tim McGuinness. We talked a few months ago about the late Jimmy Kelly of the Irish News in Belfast, who passed away 2 years ago at the age of 100, and about this story linked with a world-renowned vessel.
I knew Jimmy so well. I knew he had a host of stories about the Titanic. It so happened I got a commission from an American sailing magazine. They asked me to write an article for a couple of thousand words about the Titanic, but they said not the usual stuff about the Titanic. We would like a piece showing the kind of human side of it from a Belfast angle. And it didn't cause me a moment for concern, because I knew Kelly had it all. I knew there was a big conference coming up in Belfast that Kelly was going to and I was going to go to. So we got together. And unfortunately, he that night, over a couple of pints of water, we started chatting about the Titanic. And of course, at the time you think, I remember all these stories. I didn't. But one I have never forgotten. Jimmy told the story about the Titanic about 2 weeks before she was due to sail off on her voyage. There was a group of about 100 workers finishing off the job. And probably the bulk of that, a good number of that, would go with the voyage. This is usual of big ships like that they would go on the voyage to be there in case the problems arose. And this man was one of these picked to do that. He was finished his day's work one day, and he came down and walking down from the ship, was walking along the dock area, and he stopped and he saw a cat starting from the top of the main warp in the bow and slowly walking down the huge warp down to the ground with a kitten in its mouth. And he looked at this and he saw the cat scamper off along the and disappear momentarily only under some kind of a wooden hut. And a few minutes later, out it came, scrambled up the warp again, back into the ship. And a few minutes later, emerged again with another kitten in its mouth. By now, he's transfixed with this thing. And believe it or not, he watched till kitten number 3 came down. And he turned on his heels, went back into the Titanic, dug out his big, big canvas bag of tools, slung the tools over his shoulder and came down again, back onto the quay. As he was walking away, a friend of his came behind him and he called out. He said, "Paddy, why are you going off with all the tools?" And he made no reply. But he said, "You can't take your tools off, aren't you going on the, you're going on the voyage?" "I was," he said, "but I'm not now." And the man looked at him in amazement. He says, what's come over you?" He said, "No luck will come to that ship." And he went home, and he didn't join the crew of the Titanic on her maiden or on her voyage. He lived on to carry on working as a docker. And Jimmy picked up a lot of stories about it, but he said he knew that man for years and years and years, and he used to meet him regularly in Belfast. And he would never, ever mention the Titanic again.
The wonderful Tim McGuinness, distinguished sailor and veteran journalist. By the way, Tim reviews Viv Head's Sailing Gaffers, Stories from 50 Years of the Old Gaffers Association, which is published by Quartet Books in the latest edition of Inshore Ireland. Next Friday night here on Seascapes, we'll be celebrating the 50th anniversary of Galway Sub Aqua Club. And we'll be meeting one of the founder members, George Ryder, and club members Paula Hart, John Shane, Thomas Moore and Joe Fegan. The club dives every Sunday all year round and is based right in the heart of the city at the Ocean Sports Club. We'll have all that and much more here on Seascapes. So until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing.